Let's go back now to where things began in Minnesota. The problems in the Twin Cities with criminal justice there go much deeper than the George Floyd case. And of the 100 largest metro areas in the country, the Minneapolis income gap between whites and African Americans is the second worst in the country, a difference of nearly $50,000 a family. Again, to special correspondent Fred DeSam-Lazaro.
It was a week unlike anything Minneapolis has ever seen. The police killing of George Floyd, captured on bystanders' cell phones. Peaceful protests that quickly turned into violent and chaotic riots, reducing entire city blocks to ashes. In the middle of a deadly pandemic, the city fell into a vicious daily cycle. Cleanups under sunshine, and by nightfall, violence, looting, and standoffs with armed law enforcement authorities. On Sunday, though, at the site of Floyd's killing, protesters gathered for a peaceful rally.
I've been harassed for the color of my skin as far as I can remember. When I walk out the house, I have to worry about what's going to happen to me today.
When I saw the video, I literally wept. It just broke my heart. And I thought about, that could be my brother, that could be my dad. And I could not come out here and protest this injustice.
In some ways, Minneapolis may seem an unlikely flashpoint for America's worst urban unrest in decades.
16 Fortune 500 companies have their headquarters here in Minnesota. The state has a reputation of being prosperous and progressive. Minnesota nice is an expression one often hears. But go to minority communities and many people will tell you that's not entirely true.
You're doing well if you're white. Minnesota nice if you're white.
Mike Griffin is a community organizer in Minneapolis.
We need the leadership of this city, the leadership of the state, to really lean in on what are the structural problems that are making this community so angry.
Among those problems, an education achievement gap that's one of the worst in the country, a dark history of discriminatory housing practices, and sharp income inequality.
What you're seeing on the streets as folks show up and protest is their kind of outward illustration of what trauma and rage look like.
Brittany Lewis is a professor at the University of Minnesota's Center for Urban and Regional Affairs. We met her in North Minneapolis, the majority black neighborhood where she grew up. Over the weekend, it was the site of a massive food and supply drive for residents already suffering through the coronavirus pandemic, and now, after the rioting, the loss of so many grocery and retail stores.
You already had a community suffering from a lack of resources, food, community, and access. A lot of folks who lost their jobs were in the service industry, black and brown people. And then George Floyd happened.
She says long before George Floyd, minorities in Minnesota have faced a different kind of discrimination.
There's an overt form of racism, right, that you might be used to. But then there's a subtle form of racism that gives you the impression that you're welcome, you're invited, we want you to engage. But then you learn really quickly that's not exactly what they want at all.
However, Lewis says the George Floyd killing highlights the most glaring and certainly the most raw example of inequality for many African Americans, the difference in how their communities are policed.
I told him not to reach for it! I told him to get his hand out!
In 2016, Philando Castile, a 32-year-old black man, was fatally shot during a traffic stop. The year before, a Minneapolis police officer fatally shot 24-year-old Jamar Clark. Both cases sparked outrage, protests, and talk of change. 4 years ago, the Minneapolis Police Department put in place new policies aimed at reducing the use of force and requiring officers to intervene if they observe a colleague being abusive.
So this is a cycle that we personally here have seen play out five or six times just in the last 5 years in Minneapolis.
Tony Williams is a member of a group that wants to radically change the city's approach to public safety. He studied the relationship between communities of color and the Minneapolis Police Department.
I think for those of us who have been following this history and the culture of policing here in Minneapolis, it's a watershed moment in terms of the community that's protesting right now is no longer saying that we think reforms are going to fix the underlying problems here.
Even police chiefs around the nation are expressing outrage and frustration over George Floyd's killing.
I don't know of one police chief in Minnesota who has looked at that video and said that is the right technique.
Andy Skugman is executive director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association.
There is a sad irony in all of this. I do believe that Minnesota has worked very hard over the last 10, 15 years to improve community relations. So I think we need to double down on that and figure out ways that we can recruit more diverse candidates, but more better quality candidates just in general.
But for young black men in Minneapolis, the fixes will have to go far beyond police departments.
So we have an office here, and this guy came accusing us we can't be here.
What office are you in?
That don't worry about that. We don't have to tell
I'm
you
calling
anything.
911 now.
Go ahead.
One day after George Floyd's killing, a white man threatened to call the police on a group of young black men while they were all working out in their office building's gym.
The threat of, you know, I'm going to call 911 for a black person, if you say that to a black person in America now, is essentially, to a certain extent, a death threat.
24-year-old Abdi Hassan says the situation quickly escalated when the man began taking their pictures.
I think if it wasn't for him taking pictures, we would have never thought to pull out our phone and start recording, you know. So as soon as he started taking pictures is when our phones came out.
Hassan's colleague, 22-year-old Zach Ahmad, recorded and posted the interaction online. The video soon went viral, and the white man who had confronted them was kicked out of the building.
I wouldn't say it's too bad, but there is some, you know, racism that you face on a day-to-day. We just, as a black person, you just learn to deal with those things and not, you know, make a big deal out of them. But I think people should start recording these things so that one by one we can stop things like this from happening in the future.
But after a volatile and chaotic week, Professor Brittany Lewis is uncertain about that future.
I fear if this is not taken seriously.
Even now,
I'm not gonna lie to you, I'm worried because right now we're still in the feelings of protest and rage, but there's still a trial. There's a long road.
For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Fred DeSam Lazaro in Minneapolis.